This is the Wikipedia on David Alfred Perdue, David Perdue, an American politician and business executive who served as United States Senator from Georgia from 2015 to 2021. David Perdue, member of the Republican Party, Perdue is currently a candidate for governor of Georgia in 2022. After 12 years as a management consultant, Perdue became the CEO of Reebok. He went on to become CEO of Dollar General. He first ran for U.S. Senate in 2014, defeating Democratic nominee Michelle Nunn, daughter of former U.S. Senator Sam Nunn. Perdue ran for re-election in 2020, losing to Democrat John Ossoff, a former investigative journalist and filmmaker, in the January 5th, 2021 runoff election. Perdue is running in the Republican primary of the 2022 Georgia gubernatorial election against incumbent Brian Kemp, with the endorsement of the former President Donald Trump. They had a debate last night, and these were his opening remarks.
First off, folks, let me be very clear tonight. The election in 2020 was rigged and stolen. All the madness we see from the Biden administration, 2 million illegals, rising gas prices, unbelievable inflation, the brink of war. All that started right here in Georgia when our governor caved and allowed radical Democrats to steal our election. And because of that, he has divided our party and cannot win. What you're going to see tonight, unfortunately, is an embattled governor, a career politician, 20-year career politician, who's going to parrot his political handlers to distract you away from the fact that he sold us out and cost us a majority in the United States Senate. I'm proud to have President Trump's endorsement.
This is America, and when you're running for office, you get to say pretty much anything you want to say, even if you're not running for office. We have a freedom of speech, but I want to think about it relative to Twitter for just a minute and look at what Neil Steinberg said in the Chicago Sun-Times. He said free speech is now the equivalent. This is Neil Steinberg's take. Free speech is now the equivalent of being free from the consequences of your malicious, deceptive, and toxic ramblings. The First Amendment is a shield to hide behind. He's talking about what Elon Musk might do with Twitter. Thus, Elon Musk, he writes, the richest man in the world, on Monday reached a deal to buy Twitter, the dynamic social media platform, with the express intention of removing the guardrails that led to the ejection of those who, for instance, traffic in anti-vaccine fantasy or engage in the kind of bullying and harassment that Musk relishes. Neil Steinberg's on the phone. Neil, thanks for joining us. How are you today?
Hey, John. My pleasure. I'm well, thank you. Going through my email, you know, you stick your hand into this wasp's nest, and they get to bite you. But, you know, this is something really important. I mean, people were calling me shocked that the Musk deal went through. It seemed to have gone through. You know, these things can always have hiccups and things. But, you know, this is bad because Twitter is an enormously powerful social media. And throwing Donald Trump off because he was trying to undermine our democratic process was a key to his losing the election. And this seems like it's setting the stage for him to come back. I mean, it's the plainest way I can say it. You know, I mean, you and I, you know, freedom of speech is an odd concept. You're on the radio. I'm a newspaper columnist. We can't say whatever we want. You could be Alex Jones then. You know, and the problem is the toxicity sells. Okay, if you have no personal standards and you'll malign anybody unfairly, your people lap that up. And Twitter sort of belatedly found a social conscience, and they said, look, they're a publisher. Any publisher, anyone in the dissemination business has a responsibility. And Elon Musk doesn't feel that. He's the richest guy ever, and nobody cries like a bully. And he's found people to give him, you know, mostly other people's money, $44 billion, an astounding sum. And the assumption is that he's then going to kind of open all the cages and let everybody roam free.
Yeah.
And that's going to be bad.
You described yourself in your piece towards the end of your column today as an optimist, and you held out that maybe he won't unleash the worst of ourselves on Twitter, that maybe Trump doesn't get invited back. Donald Trump said he doesn't want to be back on Twitter, but you know you know he will, and nobody trusts everything that Elon Musk says. But Maybe Musk. I mean, we don't know what he's going
to do.
Well,
that's why I brought up the story of the rich person's underground railroad. It was, you know, 4 years ago, he stood next to Rahm Emanuel and said, "We're going to drill this thing." And I remember then just sort of rolling my eyes and going, "No, you're not." And it just wasn't going to happen. Now, this seems more likely to happen, although, you know, the problem with just letting all this stuff run free is that the decent people are driven away.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hard enough to use Twitter. As it was, Elon Musk was on all the time, you know, pumping himself. And, I mean, he had ads basically running saying what a genius he is. And I would just sort of skip over them because it gets tiresome. And so I'm hoping that people will get tired of his shtick. But
Musk shtick. But what you didn't call for in your column was everybody to drop Twitter. That is, if
that's not possible.
Why do you say that?
I just think it's too useful. I mean, I use it continually. You know, I pump my column out there. I interact with people. It's like, you know, it's like the going to Canada thing. People say that, but they don't do it, and you don't want them to.
Okay, but you just said you stuck your hand in the wasp nest and you got bit, and I presume that was on Twitter and Facebook and email and whatever.
Email. I started looking at my spam filter just because I wanted to see what people were saying. The beauty is you can be self-selected. You know, on Twitter, you follow people. I'm sure there are listeners who don't know quite what it is. And Facebook, you can curate your friends and things, and so I mean that's one of the most dangerous things is that it encourages us all to live in this little, you know, funhouse of reflections of ourselves. And so, you know, every once in a while, people will come out, you know, and they're raving about Hunter Biden's laptop and stuff, and they just can't understand how anybody doesn't despise President Biden. And I'm like, well, he's not a traitor trying to undermine democracy and rolling around at the feet of Vladimir Putin. That's actually a lot for me. So it is, you know, we're at a very dangerous moment in our country.
I understand that. Would we be having this conversation if we knew that Trump was not going to be back on Twitter? Is this about Twitter and Elon Musk, or is this about Donald Trump?
Well, I think a lot of it's about Trump. I mean, you can assume with him saying he's not going back, that's just a lie. I mean, you know, at this point, you have to assume anything Trump says is a lie, which is the problem. You know, people believe these lies because they're self-flattering, they make them feel good or whatever.
Let me ask you this. I wonder how much more persuasive, maybe the Trumpness is already baked into anything he would put on Twitter, that the needle is moved, but maybe it doesn't move anymore, right? Well, you know what you're going to get. It's not going to be surprising or persuasive. So I'm just being hopeful here because...
Oh, yeah, no, I agree with you. Maybe things have changed and that people look at the world and that enough people have either died from COVID or seen what happened in Ukraine, or sort of realize, hey, there's real-world ramifications for this. And it's one thing to have, you know, Trump shaking down Zelensky for dirt on the Bidens and refusing arms, but look what happened. And so, I mean, you know, you like to think that people are going to wise up, but to tell you the truth, that's not it hasn't been a safe bet lately.
What is your guess on the profitability, that's not the right word, but do you think that letting Trump back on Twitter would increase the revenue for Twitter, would make Elon Musk richer? You know, I wonder what the best business play is from Elon Musk's standpoint.
Well, the way these algorithms work is they tend to reinforce extreme positions because that's what gets people talking. And you know, the general take on Twitter is it's not as profitable as Facebook. It's a 20th of the size. People's toleration for ads isn't the same. So, you know, when Musk says he's going to make a bunch of money on this, I guess the assumption is he's going to make a bunch of money by taking off the guardrails and letting everybody crash into each other and enjoy the fun. So yep.
If he does that, I wonder if you're cutting off your nose to spite your face then. That'll hurt you in the long run. That's not the best play.
I like to think so. I mean, I'm a morally responsible person. But the Sun-Times, if it started to print bald lies and character assassinations on its front page, maybe more people would read it. But on the other hand, we would establish ourselves as not a factual newspaper. you know, and it almost seems like at this point in the country, there are a few things that unite us in the sense that we all participate in them. Okay, we're not all watching the same television, but, you know, 216 million people are on Twitter, and it's generally a place where you can go and just, you know, clawing your cheeks in horror. So again, I you know, you don't know what Musk is going to do. He's one of those guys who sort of sits there stroking his chin, and today he says this, and today the next day he says that. But it all comes down to, isn't Elon Musk great? And, you know, he's done so. I mean, look, Tesla is an astounding accomplishment. SpaceX, I mean, you know. But on the other hand, when you see rich guys, I compare them to Henry Ford. Okay, Henry Ford went from, you know, creating the, you know, the whole car industry to sitting mooning at Hitler. And so, you know, just because you're right in one sphere doesn't mean you can write in the other. And given what an anti-union, Elon Musk is for free speech when he's talking. Okay, when people are talking about what an idiot he is, he becomes very thin-skinned.
Oh, but, you know, I have to pause here. Give me one more minute of your time. I also want to ask you what your thoughts are about what's happened to the Reader, and there's some news about the Chicago Reader that has moved today as well. But I was one of those people who only paid attention to Elon Musk. I'm not on Twitter hardly at all anymore. I hardly even look at the thing. But I was one of those people who thought SpaceX and Tesla, that's Elon Musk. And whatever his personality is or his personal failings are, weren't consequential to me. I didn't notice. I didn't care. Now I seem to care a little bit more. But did we all dislike Elon Musk all along? And does everybody hate him now because of this? I know who will applaud him and already is applauding the notion that Donald Trump gets greater access to everybody via Twitter now. But I didn't see him in either camp. I just saw him as this billionaire madcap genius guy. Talking to Neil Steinberg, whose piece in the Chicago Sun-Times today, Freedom to Express Any Lie You Want, is about the possibility that Elon Musk, now that he'll be controlling Twitter, will unleash some of the people who had previously been kicked off the platform. I was looking at the number 1 through 10 people on Twitter, and Donald Trump, when he was kicked off, had 88.8 million followers. Taylor Swift has 90. Barack Obama has 131. Justin Bieber, 114. So it's Obama, Bieber, Katy Perry, Rihanna. Donald Trump would be number 7 if he were still on there. And the list goes on. I was asking you just before the break, Neil, if you thought of Elon Musk in these sorts of terms before, or did you just think about the hardware?
Well, I mean, he's one of those guys. He's like Richard Branson. That just, you know, can't just be rich quietly, but is sort of rich in this flamboyant way. He's got a Chicago connection. You know, his brother Kimball lived here and opened a restaurant, et cetera. And, you know, I follow his mom on Twitter. She's his model. She seems like a nice lady. So I don't want to come off as, but he has his, I would say over the past 5 years, it seems like his quirks are deepening. Okay. And he seems to be buying his own PR that he's this significant world straddling figure. And he just seems kind of angry. He doesn't seem as happy as you think Elon Musk should be. So again, I don't want to make this personal. I'm just saying it seems like he has an agenda, and the agenda seems to be to, you know, he doesn't like people telling him to be quiet. And so he spent $44 billion to buy Twitter, so things can be said. And the people who seem happiest are the worst people in our political sphere. So, you know, we don't know what's going to happen, but it seems to be bringing a lot of joy to people for whom the muzzling of Donald Trump was the signal crime of the 21st century.
I imagine there was a scene where somewhere at Twitter when this thing started, somebody said, we should have had an edit button. We should have had an edit button.
Well, if that's what it's doing, it's getting rid of spam bots. And there's a lot of weird stuff. And maybe, you know, again, there's a pot. Look, Tesla's a great car. I've driven it. It has its problems, too. But you know, he has proved himself as an ability of someone who can do wonderful things. And if he's going to make Twitter wonderful, you know, I'm not Nostradamus, can't predict it, but freedom of expression is a code word now. That's what my column was about. is, you know, people speak in code and they pretend the First Amendment allows them to say anything anywhere. And that's not true. Okay, and the publications are allowed to vet what goes in. In fact, they have to. It's a moral requirement. You know, you can't just pump out any misinformation, as we saw in COVID. It gets people killed. And you have a responsibility to live in the real world, except for people who make money by not living in the real world, because they're frauds, gulling dupes. And, you know, Twitter has had experience as a loudspeaker for those people, and the fear is it's going to go bad.
847 said Trump does not lie. 847, another one said, John, that's what people say when they're not getting their way. Go Trump. 847 said Trump doesn't need Twitter. 815 said, I love Tesla, however, not a fan of Elon Musk right now. It goes back and forth here. Let me just bounce one other thing off of you. I've got 1 minute, but the Chicago Reader co-owner Len Goodman and 3 board members have stepped down today. So that's significant.
Good riddance.
Say it again.
Good riddance.
Yeah.
They were letting their egos get in the way of the Chicago Reader's been a wonderful asset to the city, and to let it die because Len Goodman doesn't like being edited. It was not a good thing.
Len Goodman was the co-owner, I guess still technically is, but the idea is that will now become a nonprofit. And while it was going in that direction, when an editorial or an op-ed piece he wrote drew objections from the staff on what he had to say about COVID, everything sort of stalled, and now it appears as though it's going to go forward. It's a very tricky situation when your boss or the boss's boss, when the owner or publisher of a paper or site says, hey, let's print this. And then you have to make a call.
I've worked for a lot of quirky owners, and I can't remember one going as much to the mat as Goodman did over a dumb opinion piece. Anyone with a shred of self-awareness would have clammed up and stopped doing that last November. And it's just a sign of the entitlement that he really felt that this was the hill to die on. Not only him, but the whole Reader.
Yeah, right.
And I wrote about this the other day, and I don't want to plug myself, but maybe the contempt I ladled on him helped him have his come to Jesus moment. I sure hope so.
I was wondering if it was the conversation I had with Eric Zorn about that yesterday, but maybe it was you that finally got him to see the light, or at least quit fighting that fight.
Chorus of critique, or none at all. That's the thing. You know, you got to always think that maybe you had no impact whatsoever. And that's a bracing draw to reality that I wish some of these other guys could sometimes have.
I should talk to you, Neil. We'll visit again another day.
Always a joy, John. You didn't fight the good fight.
That's Neil Steinberg, who writes in the Chicago Sun-Times.